Let's do it.
Rolls out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And we have the whole crew back here for you. Everyone made it safely through the holiday weekends. Everyone's hands seem to be intact. No one had any mishaps with fireworks while celebrating America. So we'll go ahead and go through a little roll call here real quick. QB1 JR, what's happening, man?
What's going on, man? You know, 4th of July was good. Had a good cookout. Barbecue, whatever y'all call it, wherever you're at. Everything was good. Spent some time with the family. Didn't light any fireworks of my own.
Oh, wow.
Went to the park and seen some. So I had a good 4th.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Actually, no, we're not going to go in the usual order. Saxy Prince, what's going on, my man?
How y'all doing? This is Saxy Prince, aka Sexual Chocolate. It's a good day.
Sexual chocolate, huh? That's what we go with now? Sexual chocolate?
Sexual chocolate, man. Okay. I'm telling you.
Okay. All right. And we had to switch things up a little bit because, you know, this week, this episode, we're going to be digging deep. We're going to be going in. We're going to be talking about the wide receivers. And so, you know, we got our own wide receiver here. Wide receiver one, I guess Diva one, as JR would call him. Mr. Miles Gorham, what's going on, man?
First off, I'd probably say I'm far from a diva, but I mean, you got to have that mentality somewhat if you're going to play the position. I mean, you got a
diva-like response.
You got to want the ball. You got to want, you know, you want the ball in your hands. So, but I hope you all had a good 4th.
Did you get to celebrate, or were you just doing wedding stuff?
No, I got to celebrate. We had some friends over. We went to a Twins game. We got a puppy this weekend, so. So my girl's excited about that. So
you know what that means, right?
Man, you really about to do this then, man. You got a dog, a house.
You know what a puppy means, right?
Yeah, I know exactly what it means.
That's your starter baby right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me about 10 months.
Oh boy. Miles getting right down to it.
Yeah. I need a mini me like you.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah, I think you saw what that's all about, though. It can be a little hectic at times. Well, before we get into the only thing Miles wants to talk about, you know, we got a few housekeeping items we got to get out the way first. So, Sexual Chocolate, Saxy Prince.
Yeah, man.
What you got for us?
We always got to start off the pot. Yeah, it is weird. Another grown man calling you Sexual Chocolate, but we'll let it go.
Hey, you put it out there, man.
I did put it out there, so it's myself. I know this is a kind of controversial thing among Vikings Twitter. So I gotta ask you guys, where is your favorite place or even ordering to get pizza? I'm going to go first. For me, far away is easily Papa John's. Man, I love me some Papa John's. Mm-hmm.
What do you get on your pizza, though?
Oh, boy.
Right.
I'm a meat lover, so, you know, you get the sausage, the pepperoni.
Prince is out there. Just put the whole pig on the pizza. Just all of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Everything. Just everything. All the bacons.
If you can. Well, how about you, Miles? Since you're up there, where do you fall on this debate that keeps taking Vikings Twitter by storm?
The pizza? The pizza gate take?
Yeah, man.
I'm not a pizza snob. Like, so many people are so, like, so profound about pizza. Like, I like Papa Murphy's personally. You know, I like to go pick it up, throw in the oven, good to go. But y'all won't agree with what I like on it, so I'm not even going to tell y'all. So.
Oh, no, now you got to. You got to.
we like pepperoni and pineapple.
Oh,
and I know the takes of people that pineapple don't belong on pizza, but I think it tastes good, so I like it.
I'll ride with you, Miles. I'll go with a little Hawaiian pizza every now and again. But I'm generally meat lovers, but I'll switch it up.
I'd rather have the pepperoni than Canadian bacon, though.
Okay. JR is disgusted.
I know. That sounds. I'm not a pizza guy, though. I'll take burgers, brats, hot dogs, all that over pizza any day.
Before we get JR's take, what we need to find out right now, are you more upset at this moment or the first time Yinka had a popsicle on the podcast?
First, he likes popsicles. Now he's a meat lover on his pizza. It's just man laws, man. It's just the next thing you're going to say is you share an umbrella, you and your brother. That's the next thing you're going to say. So, man, it's just you just violating the man code right now, man. But me personally, I'm a DiGiorno type of guy. I'm not really a guy that likes to go out or order pizza. I kind of like the homemade thing where I can just do it quick right now, fix it in my home oven.
You making a plug right now, JR? Is that what you're doing?
No, I'm not.
I mean, if we got a sponsor, though, let me know.
I mean, I would love to be sponsored by DiGiorno's because I love their pizza. But fruit is not meant to go on pizza, man. Like, I can't believe y'all like pineapples on pizza. That, like, blows my mind. Like, what makes you like pineapple pizza? Pineapples on pizza.
It gives it a different. It gives it a little something different. I don't know.
Pineapples are delicious. Pizza is delicious. Pineapple and pizza is also delicious.
Thank you.
I love pineapples, but I just don't like it on my pizza.
Well, let's not let this tear us apart the way the NBA Finals did. You know, because I feel like JR is I can feel the tension. JR is worked up about this fruit on pizza take. So before JR goes in too much more on this, and you know. Reads us all the riot act. JR, NBA, what's going on? What are the things that that we missed since the last time we were on? What should we be talking about?
So, you know, the big name that got traded was Paul George to the Oklahoma City Thunder for Victor Oladipo and Armando Sabonis. A lot of people probably have never heard of Sabonis since he was drafted, but his dad was very famous, Arvydas Sabonis. And if you're an NBA historian, you know he's a very good player for the Portland Trail Blazers. And Sabonis is a good player. He was a rookie last season, I believe. He only averaged about around 6 or 7 points a game. So mainly a bench player for the Thunder last season. But the big piece in the trade is Paul George. Everyone knows that. We've heard rumors about him being shot everywhere this offseason. But I think the Pacers got absolutely robbed in the trade. I don't think they got enough. They were saying they wanted to get him out the Eastern Conference, which is understandable, but I think you still need to get fair value just because he is a star. And getting Oladipo and Sabonis back, no picks at all, was awful. It's probably the worst trade I've seen since the Paul Gasol trade to the Lakers from Memphis. Another big name that switched teams was Gordon Hayward, who went over to the Celtics from the Jazz. There was a lot of drama about that. I know a lot of beat writers and NBA writers were going back and forth saying that it wasn't official when I forgot who came out and said, I believe it was Chris Haynes that came out and tweeted it right away and was saying that he was going to the Celtics, and a lot of people were refuting his report. And Hayward's agent even came out and said that he hasn't made a decision yet. But I know I tweeted out whenever a player has a write-up in the Players Tribune, 9 times out of 10, they're switching teams. So I kind of figured that he was going to switch teams, and it kind of was a giveaway, in my opinion, with the whole Brad Stevens thing and coaching Hayward at Butler. I think he kind of wanted to get back with him just because he felt comfortable and he felt like he had unfinished business with him just because together they lost the national championship to Duke, and they kind of want to treat the NBA Finals and the Eastern Conference kind of that stepping stone and getting over the Cavs and just winning that NBA title. So overall, I like both moves from the Thunder standpoint and the Celtics standpoint, but those are the two biggest moves that have happened in the last few days.
So I know we had a little bit of conversation about it, but what are y'all's thoughts on kind of the makeup of the NBA now with almost all of the superstar, star, obviously not all-star because that'll get split up, but the vast majority of the movement of kind of the top-tier players this offseason has been going from, you know, east to west. And how do you guys think that's going to kind of shake out or what the NBA is going to look like when we get into next season?
I think the landscape of the NBA is going to change next year just because there's so many free agents. I don't think we've ever seen a free agent class like it is going to be in 2018. You got a lot of superstar headliner names. You got LeBron, you got KD, you got Russell Westbrook, DeMarcus Cousins, a lot of big names, and that's just the ones off the top of my head. So,
will KD be a free agent next year now?
Yeah, so what a lot of superstars are doing now is they're taking two-year deals, but they're 1-1. So the first year is a regular year, and the second year is a player option that they'll never exercise. Just so it's the whole Darrell Revis thing, what he was doing with New England. Just they're banking on maximizing their value year to year. instead of signing a huge long-term deal and getting all that guaranteed money and being locked into a certain team like Dame Lillard is doing right now. Like, he's not a free agent until 2021. So instead of locking down their rights with that team all the way for a whole extended period of time, they're just betting on themselves year to year. And I think it's smart. That's how you maximize your value in the NBA. So I think the landscape of the NBA is really going to change next year as far as the power shift.
So I know that, you know, the rumor's been that, you know, LeBron, maybe Paul George and others are going to go to L.A. and super team or former super team out west somewhere. If you're LeBron at this point, you see Golden State, and it looks like they're going to keep their thing together for a while now with KD taking significantly less than market value so that they can re-sign all their guys. Does it still make sense for him to try to make that super team out west, or does it make more sense for him to try to get a bunch of guys together someplace in the east? I mean, I don't know that he'd go back to Miami, but I mean, would it make sense to try to get some guys back together in a nice place like Miami where you know, guys want to live?
I'm calling it. We have so much bad luck in Minnesota with sports, and Wisconsin just gets away with, like, murder. And, like, I'm telling you, like, they get so lucky, and something's going to happen. And they already got Giannis. I mean
their countdown to Giannis leaving is already going. Yeah. I'm saying, does it make sense for them to go west, or should should they set something up in the east? And if they do it in the east, where do you think they end up?
I know they're a mess right now. But in my opinion, the most logical spot is the New York Knicks. My dream scenario of what happened is, I've been saying this for a while, and I don't think it would benefit them, but I think it's going to happen. Carmelo, he'll opt out after next year. LeBron's a free agent, of course. Chris Paul will be a free agent, and Dwayne Wade will be a free agent. I think those guys should link up in New York, and they should hire a guy like Mark Jackson, another hometown kid. A coach that they would respect. And I just think it just makes too much sense, in my opinion. I don't want to see it happen just because I don't think they can beat the Warriors, but all those guys are really close and they want to play together. That's evident just because basically CP3 not signing long term, LeBron doing the 2+1 deal with the Cavs, and Melo having to opt out after next year. And we know D-Wade's status with the Bulls. He's just floating in the air right now because they're clearly in rebuild mode. So all those guys are really planning to play together. I know I don't have any inside info. It's just my personal belief on what's going to happen. If it is a logical spot, it is in the Eastern Conference, and I think it's with the New York Knicks with Mark Jackson as the head coach.
Okay. And, Miles, I know you had a take on kind of what's going on with Boston and everything they're doing. They got Gordon Hayward. They're rumored to be linked up with Gasol. Just for the next season, do you think they've done enough to close the gap with Cleveland? And kind of what do you see as the future for Boston there? Do you see them emerging as the new powerhouse team in the East for years to come?
Yeah, I think it's a really smart move by Boston to kind of keep loading up on a guy like, you know, Gordon Hayward. They drafted Jason Tatum. They got all those first-round picks. You know, they got Isaiah Thomas still. So, and if they get Marc Gasol, that's even better. They're gonna be probably the best to contend in the East, you know, besides Cleveland. And then, you know, down the road, you know, they're planning to expect, you know, LeBron to leave. And they're hoping he goes out west too, I'm sure. So, at least for the foreseeable future. So, I think they made the right moves. They're making smart long-term financial moves because with all those first-round picks they got, they can still continue to make moves and basically try to go trade for anybody they want because they have all those picks and they can, you know, still move talented players by still keeping that core. So, I like what they're doing.
Y'all giving Isaiah Thomas the max contract, $205 million for 5 years?
Nope.
That's a decision they have to make here soon.
No, but I'd probably offer him like a 1 or 2 year max deal instead of a five.
I'd try to trade him and see what I could get for him. I just couldn't see myself giving a max deal to a dude who's like 5'5". I don't think I could do it.
It's a tough decision. No,
I couldn't give him Steph Curry money because he's not Steph Curry.
Right. That's understandable. It's a decision. I mean, he's their best player, and it's a tough decision that Danny Ainge is going to have to make, but it's going to be interesting to see what he does.
Yeah. Saxy Prince.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, we're talking here, you know, it's assumed LeBron's going to opt out. So what are your thoughts? Where's your boy Kyrie going to end up when it's all said and done?
Man, I'm telling you, I am on the bandwagon of bringing Kyrie to Minnesota. But in all seriousness, I think – well, as far as where Kyrie could go to
Boston.
I was thinking Boston. You could go to, I mean, he could go to Miami. But I think what I'm finding exciting, I think what other people are finding exciting as far as NBA offseason is, you know, the fact that you have really, you know, three or maybe four guys on every team that, if they are considered a star or whatever the case is, the amount of shuffling and the shift that you can get in the NBA versus the NFL. Like, if a bunch of guys from the Golden State Warriors decided they all wanted to go to Boston, you know, or they all wanted to go to, you know, an Eastern Conference team. Like, how much of a shift you would see between these two conferences, which you don't really see in the NFL, which I think why the offseason is a lot more exciting. You do have players who can dictate these offseason moves and whatnot that are going on. And, no, I think it's exciting. Again, I'm still on the bandwagon to get Kyrie to Minnesota. I will pay him. I have $5 in my wallet currently right now, so I think that'll be close to about enough. If y'all want to slide in, like, you know, a few hundreds or something like that, I'm cool with that too. But
once that DiGiorno sponsorship comes through, we got you, my man. We got you.
Right?
I wish we seen more player-for-player trades in the NFL.
Yeah.
And I think that you brought something up that I think we'll end up touching in a future pod there, because Dominic Foxworth was on Mike and Mike this morning, and he really – had some great insights in terms of, first, the conversation started off talking about kind of the shared responsibility between the players, the NFL, the NFLPA for, you know, drug treatment and things like that. But it kind of morphed into a conversation about labor rights and percent of salary that players get, the franchise tag, why you don't see player movement in the NFL like you do in some of the other sports. So I think that's something that we should definitely put in for the next pod, because it's a really interesting conversation. And it was one of the things that I found really interesting about it that he mentioned, was that as much as everyone says, you know, baseball players get paid a ridiculous amount of money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, they actually get the smallest percentage of revenue of the major sports, which I never would have guessed until he said that. The baseball players, they get about 40% of revenue compared to 48% in the NFL and 51% in the NBA. So that was something that I certainly was not expecting to hear him say, but it was a really interesting conversation. And I think it's one that we can have a pretty in-depth combo on. So I'm going to lock that into the notes for the next Slack so we can get that conversation done. But I think it's time. You know, Miles has been patient. He's ready. He's not really paying attention right now, so it'll be fun when we just go live to him right now so he can get us going on this wide receiver conversation. But JR put up a poll wondering who the best wide receiver was in the league. You know, with that, we're going to turn it over to Miles. I don't know what Miles answered on the poll, but he's going to get us now, let us know kind of what he thought of the results of the poll, and then also kind of who his best wide receiver in the NFL is and why.
Yeah, I had a hard time because I liked all the four options. What are the four options? Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, A.J. Green, Odell Beckham Jr. Was that correct to say that? So I did pick Julio Jones. I think right now, currently, to this day, he's the best wide receiver in the league. He's just a freak. He's like a LeBron James, where that man just came out the womb 6'4", 225, running a 4.3 40. You know, a freak athlete, and he's just getting better. He's scratching the surface right now. He's finally hitting that peak and hitting his hitting a stride. So I was really excited what he did in the Super Bowl. Not even good on that road about the end result, but I mean he killed the Patriots, and I feel like the Patriots got a guy like Stephon Gilmore to help match up against that kind of player. I don't even know if he'd be able to do it, but you know, they're trying to counter that. But anyways, to keep it going, I voted for Julio, but I still think it's really close with Antonio Brown. I think Antonio Brown, the way that man has crafted his game, it doesn't matter about his height, doesn't matter about his, you know, overall speed. I think he ran like a mid 4.4, a high 4.4. Because everything he does, he's just a technician. He might be the best body catcher in the league, and I don't say that as like a negative either. You know, a lot of guys, they're really good at, you know, using their hands and have strong hands, but Antonio Brown's really, really good at, you know, getting hit and catching the ball in traffic, because he's really good at finding the ball and hitting and getting into his body and protecting it. So I'm a really big fan of what Antonio Brown does. I think, again, before this last year, I had Antonio Brown as the best receiver in the league. I kind of think Julio surpassed him a bit. And then after that, I think Odell Beckham Jr. is on the rise. I mean, that dude's just phenomenal. It's crazy how good he is, how early he's been, how good he's been so early. And he's just only going to get better too. So I'd have him third. And then actually, no. See, that's a tough one for me because I really like what AJ Green does. I think AJ Green doesn't get enough credit for how good he is because I think him coming out the same time as Julio, you know, those guys are the same age. Came out of high school the same time, came out of college the same time, both high first round picks. But I mean, AJ Green arguably might have the best hands in the league. Him or Odell probably top two, in my opinion, have the, you know, top two best hands in the league. To me, it's kind of like a toss up between the two. It's just all about preference and kind of the style you like in what you like for an AJ Green and Odell Beckham Jr. Because Beckham Jr. gives you more of that, you know, explosion, where AJ Green's more of that lanky. He's lanky, you know. He's an accuracy eraser. So, you know, Andy Dalton has just been blessed by having a guy like AJ Green. So I'm going to toss up there, but I'll say Beckham right now, just because I think he can score from anywhere on the field and he can do anything. But I think AJ is really close right there too.
That's awesome. Saxy Prince, how about you, man? What do you think? Who's your number one wide receiver of the options that we had right there? And then kind of break us down through the rest of your list and kind of why you went the way that you did.
Yeah, I'm actually more so on the side of Antonio Brown. I did some research as far as, you know, when we look at the prototype as far as wide receivers over the last, you know, 10-ish years or whatnot, even more of that, Julio Jones does kind of fit that mold, you know, that 6'3 and above guy who, you know, has this freakish athletic ability. I mean, you saw it with plenty of guys. You saw it with Megatron. You saw it with Dez Bryant. You saw it with Randy Moss. You saw it with, I mean, a slew of wide receivers who all had that, you know, that height and that freakish athletic ability. So I can understand why people say Julio Jones, and Julio Jones is an athletic freak. But I think the reason why I go towards a guy like Antonio Brown is he's kind of become that new breed of wide receiver that we're starting to see in the league, where, you know, not the tallest, he's 6 feet, 6'1", around that area, but, and not like overly fast, but just has a unique sense of always being able to attack the ball, whether it's in the air or, you know, attack with route running and whatnot. So I'm with Julio Jones because I like, you know, regardless of matchup, you constantly see Antonio Brown winning against sometimes get the corners that are a lot bigger than he is. And, you know, I think that there's a reason why Ben Roethlisberger finds him in the end zone so often. So that's mostly why I went with Antonio over Julio, even though, I mean, as Miles said, it's a very, very close race between those two. I just like what I see when I watch Antonio. I love what I see with Julio as well, but Antonio is my guy right now. As far as three, I'd probably put AJ Green above Odell Beckham Jr. I just think that AJ Green is highly underrated with what he's actually able to do on the field. And it's not a knock against Andy Dalton at all, but I just think that, I mean, Andy Dalton would not still be, you know, what he is right now without AJ Green. AJ Green has made Andy Dalton. I think we need to stop pretending, if we are pretending, that Andy Dalton is anything without AJ Green.
I don't think anyone's pretending that.
Okay. Just making sure. I give him more than a slight edge over Odell Beckham Jr., even though Odell is, you know, kind of that up-and-coming type player. You know, he is kind of along the mold of the Antonio Browns, the, you know, the Stephon Diggs, the, you know, just like the not short, but shorter wide receivers compared to some of the bigger wide receivers in the league. And AJ Green, he catches pretty much anything that you throw his way. And so that's why I would kind of rank him third. And I think it's mostly
Muhammad Sanu catches everything too. Do you hear that, Jason? So say no.
Sir, so we're discussing good wide receivers right now. If you could please stop bringing up Muhammad Sanu, that would be greatly appreciated.
I think if AJ Green was, it, you know, on another team with, you know, arguably a better quarterback, if he was in New Orleans or if he was in Green Bay, you know, even New England, I think you would see, well, maybe not New England, but I think you would see just how good and how, you know, close he can compare to guys like Antonio Brown and Julio Jones. But I think the reason why we love Odell is because, I mean, the circus catches are pretty ridiculous that he's doing. We haven't seen very many people make as many and as often the circus catches as Odell has in his short career so far. The only thing that I guess I knock against Odell is obviously all the, you know, kind of some of the motions that allow him to get to the surface and allow him to lose focus, which I think is an important thing that he can improve on going forward. And he can be in the discussion for top wide receiver if he, you know, he puts the motions aside and plays at the level that we know that Odell can play at. So yeah, my list is Antonio, Julio, AJ, and then Odell.
All right. JR, I feel like since, you know, we know who you like in basketball, I feel like we could probably just go through your list for you since, you know, you always like the biggest, fastest, and strongest and everything. But we'll let you go ahead and start us off with Julio, and then we'll get the rest of the list from you as you make it through.
Julio, man. Far and away, Julio Jones is number one. Receivers who are under 6 foot can't consistently take over games in every part of the field. Receivers who are under 6 foot can't do it.
Odell Beckham Jr. is
under 6 foot. If I'm on the five yard line, are you throwing it up to Odell Beckham?
Yeah. I'm throwing it up to Antonio too.
Who would you rather have doing it, A.J. Green and Julio?
I'm taking A.J. Green, actually, probably over Julio in that situation.
No.
But see, I would have a smart offensive coordinator who knows that the better play at that point is to run a slant or an out instead of just throwing it up for that 50-50 ball.
So you mean like Russell Wilson did?
I might take Odell.
You have to – that's the difference between the guys for me. You have to scheme – a lot of those guys open with Julio and AJ. You can just tell those guys go and get it. And Odell has the best hands I've ever seen, bar none, in history since I've been alive. I've never seen nobody catch the ball and trap the ball like he can.
Better than Mohamed Sanu?
Chris Carter.
He's better than Chris Carter. His hands are better, in my opinion. Some of the catches that he makes are just ridiculous. And I think AJ has the best body control out of all of those guys as far as the way he can contort his body and change different directions to make just circus plays or circus catches. But overall, Odell has the best hands. My order would be Julio, it'd be Antonio. Then it's kind of 3A and 3B with Odell and AJ for me. But all those guys are tier one guys and they're special players. But I'm taking Julio over all those guys.
I haven't heard one positive about Antonio Brown, but you labeled him number two. I know he's sub six, but.
No, I like Antonio. The thing about Antonio is that I love about him is that he's the master of understanding the types of catches he needs to make. So if he's in tight coverage, he understands that he doesn't need to extend his arms out in the air because those guys can knock the ball down or knock his arms down. He traps the ball against his body. But it goes back to the playoffs. The Patriots did a good job of bracketing him. And he just couldn't take the game over. But you go to the Super Bowl, the Patriots had the same game plan, basically, against Julio, and he destroyed him. So that's the difference between the two for me. If Antonio Brown obviously can defeat double coverage, he's done it his whole career, but he can't consistently do it in every part of the field. With Julio, he can do it no matter where you are on the field. I think that's the difference between those top two guys for me. Odell, you really have to scheme him open, but – the thing about Odell is that he's so explosive, man. Like, at any point, he can score, no matter if it's a five-yard hit, a slant, or whatever he's running. He's a threat to score at any moment in the game. And he's by far the most explosive out of all of them to me. Antonio Brown might be a close second, but I think Odell is a little bit more explosive than Antonio because he breaks tackles a little bit more consistently than Antonio Brown does. But I just like – it's tough to decide, man. I like all four, but I just like Julio a lot better than those guys just because he's unstoppable. I've never seen nobody just completely shut down Julio Jones. Xavier Rhodes did it, I think, a couple years back whenever they played, but he still had like 60 yards, I believe. But
yeah, 2014.
Yeah, and that's probably like one of the worst games he's ever had. So I've never seen nobody just completely shut down Julio Jones like some teams have done those other guys, and we've seen it last year with Odell when they played the Vikings. They just completely flustered and shut down Odell. We've never seen nothing like that with Julio. I've never seen it. I mean, I don't have the numbers right here in front of me, but I've never seen nobody just completely hold him to like 25 yards, whatever it was that Odell had. And I'm not sure how many yards Antonio had in the AFC Championship game last year, but I think they shut him down as well. So I think Julio can just take over a game at any point, and that's the difference between him and those other guys for me.
How does that order change for you if the question is if you're starting a franchise today, how does that order switch for you, or does it stay pretty much the same?
Well, age factors into it, of course. If I was starting a franchise today, I probably would take Odell just for the age factor. He's younger than all of those guys. But if we're talking strictly from a talent standpoint, I'm taking Julio.
Same for the rest of you, or you guys sticking with the order? Or are you switching it up if we're saying starting a franchise today, which one of those guys are you taking?
Yeah, starting a franchise, I'm definitely going Odell. Then Julio. Then I'll go Antonio Brown, and then Green.
Yeah, I'm going the same. Brown's technically the oldest out of all four of them. He's 28. Julio and AJ are all 27. And then was Beckham 22, 23. So I go the same order. I go Beckham, Julio, Green, Brown.
What's wild, I was just looking up the stats. It's crazy how little Odell and Julio were used in the red zone, especially inside the 10.
Right.
Last season, Julio only had, looks like, 6 targets inside the 10.
How many touchdowns?
Only 9 inside the 20 last year.
That's because they got a dynamic duo in the backfield.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And Muhammad. Yeah,
Oh, man. Muhammad Sanu. So, I mean, since we are talking about the man with the greatest hands in the NFL, per Miles Gorham.
Per the drop rate.
So, if you could let us know, what is, in your opinion, kind of the most important trait for a wide receiver to have?
That's what I was telling you guys before the pod. There's just so many, like, little things I think people don't understand about what it takes to play a receiver. You know, route concepts, understanding the whole offense, you know, the right steps to take. The correct foot forward and back, the correct movement off the line of scrimmage, the stems. There's so many things that go into it. I'd say probably, you know, overarching, though, the most important, I'd probably say route running would probably be the tops for me, because there's, you know, you don't have to be the fastest guy to get yourself open, but you need to be the most refined and a technician. Like, I think a guy like Odell Beckham Jr., how explosive and everything he is, what's made him so elite so early on is how dynamic his route running is. He's so good at route running. It's crazy for how young he is, the things he can do. And, you know, a guy like Stephon Diggs to that point too, and Antonio Brown, you know, those guys, those sub-6 guys, you know, those 6-foot guys, you know, they might not have the, you know, 4.3 speed, but, well, Beckham does. But you know, those guys, what they've done to help their careers early on in their careers is they've refined their route running. They've allowed themselves to find ways to get open instead of just using their pure athletic skills. They have other ways of doing it. So I'd have to say route running is probably the most important thing to me. And then, you know, from there, it kind of just goes, you know, route concepts and understanding of offenses. And then, you know, obviously there's the physical tools that you need to have, you know, some of the athletic ability you need to have. But
did that change for you at all if you're talking inside receiver versus outside receiver?
In a way, because I think the inside receiver needs to have a little bit more agility than he needs to be, you know, in terms of speed. He doesn't need to be, you know, super fast on the outside, in the slot, you know, more agility. Guys like Jarvis Landry, Julian Edelman, you know, in a sense, Stephon Diggs, I don't, you know, think he's relegated to the slot, but he played primarily in the slot last year. I know it pisses you off, Jason, but it's true. He has more, you know, that quick twitch, so he's really set up to be a really good slot receiver. So those quick twitch guys are really good in those areas, and then, you know, sometimes they like to say the outside guys are, you know, your prototypicals, the Julios, the AJs, those type of guys. But, you know, the Antonio Browns and Odell Beckhams, they don't have to play the slot. They can move around too. So I'd say it kind of varies. I'd like it, for an example, Jordan Matthews, you know, he's built like he should be an outside receiver, but he's primarily a slot receiver because that's the way his route concepts are and the way he more agility, which is – it's weird to me, like, how he is – a primary slot receiver when the way he runs and the way he's built is set to be an outside receiver. So I have a hard time with him, but yeah, to your point, I think it's more of a, you know, it does vary from slot and outside.
And Yanka, how about you? When you're thinking about kind of the most important trait for a wide receiver, what are you looking at?
Well, I think we all know slow feet don't eat, right? So obviously a guy that has the, I mean, this kind of goes along with the ability to, you know, run routes, releases that they get off the line. But definitely very technical footwork. I'm also looking at body control as well. If you look at, you know, we talk about, you know, the jump balls and, you know, some of the more circus catches and stuff, but something that I've noticed, and I can always tell a guy that can, it's weird, I can always tell that a guy who can dance based on how he, you know, plays wide receiver sometimes. And some of the guys with the best body control, I can almost guarantee you they're actually pretty decent dancers, because it takes that that ability to, you know, again, have the, obviously the footwork to be able to tap it inside. But for the guys who are going up and attacking the ball, you know, in the air, it does take, you know, a certain amount of torque and, like I said, body control to be able to, you know, rotate your hips and body in the air to be able to catch some of the things, some of the balls that they're getting. So I'm definitely looking at footwork, looking at body control. I mean, obviously, wide receivers catch with their hands, but I know those are the things that I'm looking at first if I'm looking for, you know, wide receiver.
And QB1, when you were out there deciding which guy you were going to, you know, go to in the progression, what for you is the most important thing? What are you looking at for wide receivers?
I think number one, of course, is route running. I agree with Miles. I don't think you can teach route running. That's just my personal opinion. You can rep all these special drills and everything that you want to do for certain guys, but I think it's just a natural feel. And I think it's climbing the pocket is, or pocket presence for a quarterback is sort of similar to a receiver's route running. I think it's just some things that's naturally gifted to a guy. Either you have it or you don't. I don't necessarily think you can teach route running. You can rep it and rep it as many times as you can in the world, but some guys just don't have it. We've seen it with a guy like Cordero Patterson. He's a prime example that I like to use, who was – the thing with Cordero is he always got by with his athletic ability, and he never was forced to learn how to run routes. And when he got here in Minnesota, they tried the hardest to make him learn how to do it, but he just couldn't do it just because, of course, he was one of the best athletes in the draft, but it's just a natural feel that you have to have as a route runner, and it comes with reps sometimes when a guy has it, when you have a natural feel for it, as opposed to starting all the way from scratch with a guy, if that makes sense. So it's kind of hard to explain, but with a slot guy, I think the biggest thing they have to have is having to have a read and react ability. What I mean by that is from the slot, you have to be able to know where to sit down in zones if it's zone coverage. You have to be able to know how I can defeat this guy if it's man coverage, because it's a little different for an outside receiver as opposed to a slot receiver. You can go three different ways as a slot receiver. As an outside receiver, you can't really go that many ways just because as a corner, you're going to use the sideline as an extra defender, and you have to know that as a receiver that you can only go so far. As a slot guy, you can go forward, you can go right, you can go left. So it's kind of like you're on an island where you're a slot guy. So being able to read coverages and react to it based on how the defense is playing you, I think that's a big trait that you have to have as a slot receiver.
That's awesome. And Miles, as a follow-up for you, is the reason that you like Mohamed Sanu so much the fact that Treadwell might be able to beat him in a foot race?
Hey, I mean, if he does, good for him. I don't remember Mohamed Sanu's 40 time out of the combine. You probably do.
4.67.
Oh, hey, I mean, the man got paid, didn't he? So he's still doing his thing.
Hey, I played against Mohamed Sanu.
Of course he did.
How'd that go for you?
We got crushed.
Was it in high school or college?
It was in college when he was at Rutgers. He destroyed us.
He was a beast in college.
Yeah, he had like, I think he had 3 touchdowns that game. All from the slot. Yeah.
And second follow-up question. So all of you kind of listed route running as your kind of top thing, or awareness, route running, body control, that sort of thing. But Treadwell is also your guy. So help me understand, and I know we're going to have a little bit more conversation about the Vikings wide receiver core, but help me understand how you kind of put those things together for a guy who throughout his career struggled with the thing that you're saying is arguably the number one trait that a wide receiver should have to ultimately be successful.
for me, I honestly think pre-injury, he was on his way to becoming a better route runner. I really think the injury that he had to his foot and his ankle really hurt his ability to really cut and make some of those moves as a route runner that you need. I think his junior year, you know, when he came back from injury, he was just kind of playing off of his physical abilities and wasn't able to really explode, wasn't really able to do a lot of the movements he should have been. So I think right now, and I think this is the first time since his injury he's fully been healthy. So I think you're finally starting to see him get that opportunity, you know, through training and, you know, off-season work to actually work on his route running. He's not working on rehab. He's not working on anything else. He's focused on those the most important parts of, you know, being a receiver. And, you know, the most important that, you know, Jay and I said was route running. So I think you're really going to start seeing him get better at that because he's healthy. So I don't think it's as much of a deterrent in his, you know, abilities as, you know, some might think. I think he's actually a pretty decent route runner. You're finally just going to get the opportunity to see it because he's healthy. So that's where I'm at with it.
Okay. And moving from someone who has questionable route running to someone whose route running is impeccable, tells a story every time he runs a route. And our man, JR, laid down a 2,000-word article about Stephon Diggs that is blowing up on climbingthepocket.com. If you haven't already read it, you should go over and do that immediately after listening to this podcast. But JR, yeah, help us understand what led you to write this article, because your inspiration came quick on this one for you. And yeah, what you learned when you were studying Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, so a lot of times your best articles come in random moments. So the article really came from a random thought. I love Stephon Diggs' route running. He's one of my favorite players actually to watch on the Vikings. Just how technical and how much attention to detail he pays when running his routes, that's what I think is really special about him. And I go really in depth about his actual route running in the article. And the three most common routes that the Vikings have him run is slants, outs, and curls or comebacks. So those are the three types of articles that I really, the three types of routes I really went in depth about. I think he's the best out runner in the NFL. That's my opinion. And we've seen the timing that he had his rookie season with Teddy, and a lot of routes that they hooked up on were out routes. And the one I focused on was the one he ran against Marcus Peters in 2015, which was exceptional. Just the little things that he does and the nuance and understanding of angles that he has when he runs his routes and the releases and the patience that he has when he runs his routes is really special. But I don't really want to spoil the article, so go read it on climbingthepocket.com and make sure y'all check it out. Let me know what you think afterwards, too. I enjoy feedback.
Saxy Prince, I know that you are also a Stephon Diggs guy. Route running is obviously something that you are very, very high on, and you've made the comment, and I know it was one of the things we talked about actually before the Vikings drafted Laquon Treadwell. One of the things that you said often is that, you know, at the time Teddy wants guys who get open, not necessarily just a big guy. But what were your thoughts after going through JR's article, and then we can transition from there for you to give us a little bit of your thoughts on the article that you dropped about the Minnesota Vikings depth chart for wide receivers and some of the conversation that's been sparked by that.
Yeah, no, I thought kudos to JR because I thought it was a fantastically written article. You do get inside. JR, you do a really good job putting yourself and the readers inside the mind of a wide receiver, especially one Stephon Diggs, because something that, you know, even I missed when watching sometimes the route running was not even the route running, but you even alluded to at one point in your article, even the, you know, the throwaway that he does when he's doing his route running. So like just the little nuances that you see with wide receivers that you don't always, you can't always catch on when the game is full speed. And even when you break it down to all 22, until you like slow it down, you're actually not able to see. Yeah, you can see the quick touches. You can see the, you know, the stutter steps that are good enough. You see where the plant foot leg is and how, you know, how clean the route is, but you're missing a lot of the physical aspects of it. But I mean, for me, my intrigue for someone like Treadwell, because I actually do really love Stephon Diggs, is I actually wasn't as much in love with his route running, but I love that his, I was more in love with, you know, kind of that bully attitude that he brought to the table. I mean, oftentimes, you know, Treadwell was catching in tight spaces, but I think it was because of the confidence that he carried with himself and the ability to attack the ball in ways that you don't always see from certain wide receivers. You know, the space that he was able to create, even though it was a tight throw, I think that was my intrigue with Treadwell so much, and why I wanted him to be a part of the Vikings, because I don't see a lot of the Vikings wide receivers doing that. You see a lot of Stephon Diggs creating space. Adam Thielen does the same thing, but you don't see a lot of, you know, that basketball mentality of creating space with the other wide receivers that you do see with Treadwell. So that was my big intrigue with him, because, you know, we do struggle in places like the red zone that is a tighter space for wide receivers to operate. So I thought, looking at him and looking at what he could do, you know, let's get a different type of wide receiver who might be able to create more situations where the quarterback feels more comfortable throwing into those tighter spaces. So again, that was, again, kudos to JR for what he does. I recommend everyone to absolutely go and read that. As far as my article, I go into the depth chart. Feel free to go and read it. I'll try to retweet it again tomorrow. But I kind of go into the depth chart. And as far as the wide receiver position, I know that depth charts don't matter as much as they do in some other positions, because, you know, you're constantly moving wide receivers around on the line. You have different wide receiver packages. You might have two, three, four wide receiver sets. You might have a running back playing. You motioned out to a wide receiver. But I just, for the purposes of the depth chart, I went into why I felt, you know, Stephon Diggs was way far away as our best wide receiver. And I actually put, you know, not to spoil the article, but I did put Jarius Wright as, you know, fourth wide receiver, which I know a lot of people might not agree with, but my reasonings, I kind of go into that within the article, considering some of the controversies around what, you know, Michael Floyd and what the team is going to be, as well as, you know, some things that I think he can still do well for the team.
Jarius Wright, number four. What's so, if Jarius Wright's number four, where's Mobo? Why are you yelling at me while you on mute, though?
Mobo is on his way back to Germany, actually. It was a great story, but I do not foresee this happening. I don't even want him on the practice squad at this point, unless he shows some significant strides as a wide receiver. There are some guys that I would rather keep around, you know, someone like a, you know, Stacy Coley, you know, some of our later round picks to see if, you know, they can start contributing, not this year, but looking into next year. And obviously there's going to be some, there's going to be some draft picks from other teams that are going to be cut and whatnot. And that's something the Vikings should look into. But as far as Moritz Boehringer, if there was any optimism, it was long gone when he didn't get a single preseason snap.
Wasted draft pick.
Yeah. I mean, JR said it earlier, but I mean, if a guy is not playing in preseason, even a snap,
he might have got like two reps at wide receiver, I think, in the last game, but it was bad.
I mean,
so JR, because I know you, that Mobo pick that gets you worked up. So before we get you into your deep dive of the Vikings depth chart, now that you know Yinka, well, I guess I brought up Mobo, and we know how that gets you going every time. Now we need to rank order. Are you more upset when you think back to the Vikings wasting that pick on Mobo? Yinka bringing a popsicle to the podcast, or Miles and I putting pineapple on pizza? Rank them in order of which one makes you most angry to least angry.
Mobo, man, like, y'all know the draft is near and dear to my heart. And that pick, they just fell into the media circus because the guy was sitting at the draft too, and he just kept saying how much he loved, I believe it was Randy, no, it was Adrian Peterson, how much he loved Adrian Peterson. And it's like the Vikings draft room was looking at the draft and was like, oh man, this kid, he's going to want to be here. He's going to give us his all. So let's draft this kid. But you look at his film and he's playing against terrible talent. And I'm not a fan of taking guys from overseas just because you've seen guys with against better talent already here on your soil. So I wasn't a fan of the pick at all. I hated the pick when it happened, and just it's embarrassing in my opinion now.
To the Vikings' credit, I don't think the pick was necessarily just the Vikings' decision. I think that this was also the NFL's way to be like, hey, Vikings, if you guys can, you know, take one for the team, you know, this would actually go a long way as far as establishing more, you know, interrelations between other countries and whatnot, specifically Germany. If they want to have a team from London, Germany, Mexico, you know, China, all that stuff, you know, I think this was the first or one of many, I should say, where, you know, again, you take a late round flyer on a guy who might not ever make it, but it becomes a great story, not only for the Vikings, but for the league. I wouldn't be surprised if the league does something for the Vikings.
They took Teddy from us, so that's what they did.
What has it benefited, though? And, who's going to remember the pick in 5 years?
Before we go too far down this road, I just want to let y'all know that we love our fans in Germany. Germany is actually the third highest ranked country in terms of page views and listens for us. So German fans are usually the first people to listen to the
pod. Really good beer.
We get the pod up. You know, our European fans are the first ones to listen to it. German fans, we love you.
Yes, we do.
We do love you. We just don't love Moritz Boehringer as a football player. We wish him all the best. We just don't think he's that good. But, you know, because JR, I saw you getting a little, you were getting ready there. You were getting riled up. I know that you really hate when teams waste draft picks, but I want to bring you back. Give me your rank order, you know, 1 through 6 Vikings depth chart for wide receivers.
So I'll go, I say Diggs is 1. I think he's going to take a big step forward this year, assuming he stays healthy for 16 games, which we haven't seen yet. Thielen will be 2. I think Treadwell will be 3. I think he has a better year this year. I mean, it can't be any worse. But I think this is my prediction for Treadwell. I think he'll have around 30 catches, about 400 to 450 yards, and 3 to 4 touchdowns. I think that's a realistic outcome for Treadwell. I think he'll take a step forward this year, and I think they're going to force feed him a little bit this year. They're going to make him prove that he belongs on this team before they have a more proven commodity come back from suspension in Michael Floyd. If Treadwell can't prove that he can be that guy that they spent a first-round pick on or show some signs of life or improvement from his rookie season, I think they're going to quickly phase him out for Michael Floyd just because I think he has better traits than Treadwell does at this point right now. He's a little bit more proven in the NFL. I'm just taking Michael Floyd out the equation right now, assuming he's on suspension right now. I think a surprise guy is going to be Rodney Adams, guys, just because nobody on the Vikings receiving corps can blow the top off of a defense right now. And we've seen a guy like Taylor Gabriel from the Falcons blow the top off of a defense 2 to 3 plays a game. And I think Rodney Adams is capable of doing that. He did it at South Florida, whether it's a post route or a go route, even if they're forcing it to him 2 to 3 times a game and they're taking a shot down the field, I think he's capable of catching that. And he's not going to get a heavy amount of reps, but why can't he come in and be a decoy? And who's to say he might be open sometimes as a decoy and they might force it up to him. And we've seen them take shots deep. We saw it last year in the Bears game with Stephon Diggs where he dropped the ball over the middle of the field on the post route. I think routes like that will be Rodney Adams this year. So I think he could be wide receiver 4 this year. I think he can supplant Jarius Wright in that slot role, in my opinion.
Oh no, Prince.
That's just my opinion.
He doesn't mean it, Prince.
Go read the article, y'all, because I mean I kind of allude to this. I'm not completely against it. In my opinion, spots basically 4 through 6, they are really a big toss up. And I think that's not a bad thing. You know, Rodney Adams could come in and he could beast in the preseason and he can become that guy. I mean, he might even, you know, he could, if he really does that well, you might even see him on, you know, some 3 wide receiver sets with Diggs and Thielen. But I'm not against the take.
And I'm not saying Rodney Adams is going to be that slot guy because that's not his game. He's not a guy that's going to find the holes in defenses and just carve them up and pick them apart and be able to sit down in zones. That's not his game. He's a guy that needs to get vertical and blow the top off defenses. He's sort of like Mike Wallace. Mike Wallace is not that underneath guy that's just going to dominate the game. He makes his money getting vertical down the field. And that's exactly what Rodney Adams does. And that's the thing he has over Jarius Wright. Jarius Wright, he's more of a, you know, slot guy that can pick and choose his wins and in the slot. So I don't know, man. I worry about Jarius just because I think he's going to get phased out quickly just because they have guys that already can do what he can do. And it's just like, what value does he bring to the team? I know he brings that veteran presence, but you have a guy like Diggs that can do everything that you can do, and you're not that 4-4 guy like you were coming out of Arkansas anymore. So it's just like, what value do you bring to the team right now?
That third down efficiency, though, man. That third down efficiency. That's what he brings to the table. He's at, like, I believe he's at 15 yards. He's averaging about 15 yards per reception on third down, which I think that's still where his value is. I don't know what it is about third downs, but Jarius Wright just shows up both on tape and, you know, in games. Just third downs, put Jarius Wright in, throw him the ball 15 yards.
And I'm fine with Jarius. I have nothing against him. He's a third down chain mover, but, I mean, why spend that time on an older guy when you can get a guy like Diggs those touches who's proven to be more explosive?
He's the second highest paid wide receiver on the team.
Exactly.
And he'll get 20 targets this year.
So, I mean, I don't know. So we'll see.
Where are you at with it, Miles, in terms of your kind of rapid fire, you know, 1 through 6? What do you think it's going to shake out?
Yeah, I think, I'm pretty on par with what Jero was saying. I'll keep Michael Floyd out of the equation because we still don't know the suspension situation, which is crazy to me that we don't have an answer yet. But it'll be Diggs, Thielen, Treadwell. I think, like JR's point, it'll be, if Roddy Adams can show enough during camp preseason, I think he'll beat out Jarius Wright. But I think Jarius Wright will still be in the mix because a guy like Michael Floyd will be suspended. So I think those are the top five. And I think the surprise sixth, if it's not Stacy Coley, in my opinion, it could be a Caleb Jones. I think he's a guy that could, surprisingly make the roster out of camp, especially with Michael Floyd being suspended. And then another name I think might surprise a few people. I don't know if he'll make the team, but I think he has a chance to maybe make the 53 or make the practice squad potentially. This is a long shot, but I was RJ Shelton fan coming out of Michigan State. I think he's an ideal slot receiver. I don't think he'll make the team or anything, but he's just a name I'm excited to watch during the preseason. So, so my 1 through 6 would be Diggs, Thielen, Treadwell, Rodney Adams, Jarius Wright, toss up. And then my hot take is Caleb Jones. And then Caleb Jones or Stacy Coley.
All right. For me, obviously Diggs is number one for me. Thielen, 2. Start of the season, I think, is Treadwell, but my hope for the offense is that, as we get deeper into the season, that Michael Floyd steps into that third wide receiver role. I think that what he brings to the table opens up this offense a lot more than where Treadwell is in terms of even his college profile. When you look at, Treadwell's yards per reception, he went downfield occasionally. He did make big plays, but he didn't even profile in college as a deep threat, quote unquote, right? So to think that he's going to come to the NFL and be that guy who can't help to open up the offense, I don't think that's him. And when you look at our wide receiver core right now, the guys who are slated to get a lot of snaps, we don't really have, a guy who at this moment really makes teams respect us vertically. We have a lot of guys who challenge, do very well, short, intermediate type ranges, but we don't really have anyone who opens things up. So my hope for the offense is that, Floyd can come back and step into that role and can be the guy who threatens downfield a little bit more. And then from there, at least we get 4 through 6. It's a toss up. But next up for me would be Treadwell, 4. Yeah, I'm kind of in line with where JR is a little bit. I think Jarius Wright is likely to be the one who starts to get phased out. Yeah, then it's a toss up amongst the young guys who flashes in the preseason, who does what to slide into that fifth wide receiver role and potentially a sixth if we end up keeping another one on the roster even after Floyd is back. But that's where I'm at, and that's why I think that and bringing in a guy like Floyd with all the risks that come along with him and the reason that they've stuck by him, I think that he is someone who does add an element to the offense that is missing with the guys that we do currently have on the roster.
Stacy Coley is going to ball in preseason. I love Stacy Coley.
What happened with him? What was the injury that kind of kept him out of minicamp?
I don't remember what it was in minicamp. I know he had a knee injury. He played with a brace last year on his left knee, I believe it was. But he's a guy that he was like Diggs. He always had those nagging injuries throughout his career. And I think he missed a whole, I want to say 19 games at Miami. He missed a whole lot. So, but I mean, he's a guy that's always going to be injured. But when he does play, he flashes a lot, which is what he did in Miami. So I think they got a steal in the seventh round, I believe it was. So I think he's going to flash a lot in preseason, but he's a guy you can't really count on a lot because he's a guy that's going to stay in the training room with injury. So I like him a lot. We'll see how he does. I'm excited about him. I think they got a steal.
That's why it wouldn't surprise me at all if, you know, if he did get a little nagging injuries during the preseason, if they found a way to sneak him onto the practice squad.
Yeah.
All right. I guess anyone else have any thoughts in terms of, you know, wide receiver depth chart? If you haven't already, go check out Yanka's article on Daily Norseman. Yanka, what's the article called?
It actually goes away from my typical. I usually try to find like a unique thing that's run through my head, but it's just it literally is just a Vikings wide receiver depth chart. So
he makes it easy for you to find it. Yep. So rapid fire, and I know that we've had a little bit of talk about this offline, but rapid fire, JR, we going with you first. Rank the NFC North wide receiver groups. And for this, we're just going to go wide receiver 1, 2, and 3. So best trio to worst trio, NFC North. JR, you're up.
Best. I like the Vikings. The best. I don't think. I don't know. It's kind of a toss-up between the Vikings and the Packers because Devontae Adams, he proved a lot to me last year. He struggled a bit. His rookie season. But I thought he had a good year last year. They targeted him a bunch more than his rookie season, and he struggled with drops his first year. But he proved a lot to me last year, especially when we went up against him. And he improved his route running. He improved his hands a lot. So I put the Packers 1 just because they have Jordy. They got Devontae Adams, and they got Randall Cobb. I like the Lions, man. I like the Lions. I'll probably put them 2. They have Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, and I forgot who their third receiver. I believe it was Anquan Boldin last year. Their third receiver not popping in my head right now as far as who they signed or whatever.
Right now it's Mr. Kenny Golladay.
Kenny Golladay, your draft crush, who's turning heads at OTAs and minicamp. So
that's my guy.
Yeah, I have the Vikings 3 just because I think both their guys are still kind of improving, so to speak. Diggs is – he had a good year last year, but I still want to see him do it again. I want to see him stay healthy. Thielen is a one-year wonder right now. He had an exceptional year last year, but I still want to see him do it again before I crown him. And the Bears, they just have a bunch of guys right now, and you really don't know who the top 3 guys are going to be. They signed a guy like Victor Cruz. You got Kevin White, who still can't stay healthy and is an unknown. So they got a lot of unknowns on their depth chart. They just have a bunch of guys, a clutter of guys. So it'll be interesting to see who rises to the top on that depth chart.
All right, Mr. Gorham, what you thinking?
Yeah, I'd probably have to say, unfortunately, that I think Green Bay's probably got the most proven top 3 wide receivers in the NFC North. So I say they're 1, you know, Jordy, Cobb, and Devontae Adams. Everybody, you know, says that I'm a big Devontae Adams fan, which I liked him coming out of college, so I like him. Unfortunately, I just think he plays on the wrong team. I'd say the Vikings are probably – This is the toss-up for me. It's between Detroit and Minnesota because I think long-term, I think the Vikings have the better core of wide receivers than Detroit. Maybe not quite as proven. So I'm going to take the Vikings over Detroit, Diggs, Thielen, because I think they have the highest upside with what they have. As of right now, based off of the amount of receivers they have to compete for that position, they have the highest upside for that wide receiver 3 position. You know, if Treadwell comes out and balls out, or, you know, Floyd comes in and takes that role over, or even a guy like Rodney Adams. You know, one of those guys has the opportunity to take that role over and be really good in that role. I think the sky's the limit for that for the receiving core. And then I'd say Detroit's next. And then I'm excited about Kenny Golladay, though. I think I'm still curious if they're going to go after a guy like Anquan Boldin still. Sounds like he's making his decision come training camp. Probably, you know, that Brett Favre rule where he's like, I don't need to go to training camp. You know, I'm going to get, you know, 50 catches, 600 yards, and 8 touchdowns to do that. But then, like JR said, the Bears would be last. Cameron Meredith, basically the only bright spot they have currently. He had a really good year last year as an undrafted free agent. Kevin White, yeah, who knows? He's a pretty big unknown at this point. Victor Cruz, Marcus Wheaton. Yeah, like, again, like JR said, just a lot of names. So not a lot to prove. They have a lot to prove. So mine would be Green Bay, Minnesota, Detroit, Chicago.
All right. And Mr. Sexy Prince, yes, before sir. We get your – did you just put your Spider-Man pajamas on?
Okay, so real quick, y'all. I'm going to see Spider-Man in probably like half an hour. So I had to do a quick change and whatnot. But as far as my wide receiver rankings, I'll go – I agree with Miles. So I'll go Green Bay, Vikings, Detroit, and Chicago. Green Bay obviously has the most experience on the roster. I think what we see with the 1-2 punch on Jordan Nelson and Randall Cobb, you know, that's who Rodgers is looking for, and he can put up numbers with those two.
Jordy and Devontae, then Randall Cobb.
I actually like, you know, if they can be more proven this year, I mean, mostly Adam Thielen, but I actually like Stephon Diggs and I like Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen better than I like Jordy and Randall Cobb. But it, you know, it does come down to whoever the third Vikings wide receiver is going to be. So that's why I give Green Bay the edge over that. I think Detroit's wide receiver core is going to be up and coming, I think. Maybe. But I just think that as far as what Chicago has, they still have Kevin White, who's barely played since he's been drafted. So, yeah, I have to put them last.
Jason's favorite receiver, Kevin White.
Yeah. Kevin White is not good, never was good, and was drafted because he ran fast in a straight line at the combine, which is all of the wrong ways to use numbers when drafting receivers in particular.
It's because they saw Julio and that's not what they got.
Yeah, you know, they forget that Julio actually was good at Alabama.
It ran routes.
When he was young. So, anywho, we won't get too far off track. I agree with Miles and Yinka there. I think it's Green Bay, Minnesota, very slightly ahead of Detroit, and then Chicago. I mean, from a fantasy standpoint, I'm a big Cameron Meredith guy. I was able to pick him up, and he helped me win some weeks last year. But, you know, if he's the most proven name on your wide receiver depth chart, it's probably going to be a long season for you at that position. So that's where I'm at with it. Yeah, and that's really what we got for the wide receiver conversation.
Real quick, last question, rapid fire. Your favorite wide receiver trio on the entire NFL? You can start, Jason.
Oh, the entire NFL. Man, what was the list I sent you the other day? The Patriots are coming to my mind right now as one of my favorites in that group.
Of course they are.
The Steelers, but obviously Juju's a bit unproven. Wow, what else? I need to go back and look at the list.
The Giants, they got Brandon Marshall, Odell Beckham, and Sterling Shepard.
That was going to be mine.
I don't like Sterling Shepard all that much, though.
You got Tampa Bay with Mike Evans, DeShaun Jackson, and
they were in my top five. Yeah, Chris Godwin. Don't say Adam Humphries.
Well, I'm just saying, on the depth chart, he might be the three. So.
Nah. I mean, Adam Humphries ain't keeping that job.
No.
I guess the Cowboys, in terms of – you know, how they perform, they would need to be up there as well. Terrence Williams isn't that good, but he was efficient when they did actually go towards him last year. And Cole Beasley, you know, might be one of the most underrated wide receivers in terms of what he actually did with the opportunity that he received last year. So the Cowboys would probably be in the top five for me, but I need to put a little bit more thought into it to figure out how I was going to put them in an order. JR, what about you, man?
I was going to say the Giants. I like the trio the best. I know they haven't played together yet as far as adding Brandon Marshall into the equation, but I think adding him is going to ease Odell's workload a little bit, and it's going to free Sterling Shepard up in the slot a lot as well. So I like that trio a lot, and I like the potential that they have. Eli had a down year last year, but I think adding those weapons on the perimeter and Evan Engram as well, who I think is going to be a really good factor for them as well as a tight end, whether he's attached or unattached in certain formations, whichever they decide to use him. I think he's going to be a great tool for them and those three guys as well. So I'm really excited to see how all four of those guys play together. But that trio of Marshall, Sterling Shepard, and OBJ, I think can be really special.
Yinka, what about you, man?
I was going to say maybe Dallas. The Giants were another one.
Yeah, I think I'll go with Dallas. You know, Cole Beasley is, in my opinion, underrated. I love Des Bryant. I love the ability that he's able to bring to the table. But then, you know, then you have the Giants who do have, you know, three really nice wide receivers who can attack you kind of all over the field. So I guess my pick will be the Giants. Yeah, I'll go with the Giants.
And Miles, since this was your question, I'm sure you got something in mind. Where are you at with it?
You're not going to agree with it. We've referenced all three players tonight on this pod. I'm picking for their roles and the way they all play those roles. And I think they fit each other and complement each other well. I'm going Atlanta. You know, got Julio, Muhammad, and Taylor Gabriel. I think those guys just complement each other really well. You know, Julio is that, you know, alpha number one, does it all, does everything. You know, is arguably the best receiver in the league. I think Mohamed Sanu is a really good possession receiver behind him. Moves the chains, stop. Moves the chains, catches the ball, gets himself open, and he seems to be a good outlet for Matt Ryan. And then Taylor Gabriel is the guy that takes the top off the defense and is that gadget player that that complements those two and what they do. So he's allowed to be, you know, his efficiency goes up because he doesn't do it as often. But when he does get the opportunity, he performs. So I think that's my favorite trio in the league. They might not all be the most talented, but I think Julio kind of takes it over the top with what they have. But that's my pick.
You sure you don't want me to just edit this whole part out for you? Stop.
And then to point to the New York Giants one, I'd say this is the most talented right now. I think it's the best receiving core that his entire career. I was looking at the 2007 Giants roster, and they had Plaxico Burress, whereas an Amani Toomer and Steve Smith were like the top three receivers that year. You know, you got Plaxico Burress playing Brandon Marshall's kind of playing that role. Odell Beckham Jr. is a way better Amani Toomer, and Sterling Shepard's probably on that par with Steve Smith. So I really like what they have going on too.
Okay. All right. Well, what does everyone have upcoming? Saxy Prince, what's going on with you? What's next up?
Yeah, I was kind of in a little bit of a dilemma. I don't know if I want to go straight into the O-line just yet. So it's either going to be the O-line or I'm going to go straight back, go into defense right away and just do maybe linebackers or the defensive line. So I'm still tossing up who I want to start breaking down first. So it's going to be one of those two cores.
Awesome. So you're keeping that depth chart series going from now through training camp then?
No, I'll probably be done sooner rather than later. And then I'll start trying to get into some, maybe some, individual player breakdowns, like players that are kind of under the radar. One guy I'm looking at right now is Edmund Robinson. Cause I mean, he does have the ability to potentially grab that starting will linebacker spot. So I kind of want to look at some, you know, some underrated guys that are, you know, not really being talked about as much.
Awesome. Miles, we know your answer. T-minus 8 days, so we'll keep that moving along. And JR, what inspiration has come to you of late? What's the next thing we're going to get to you, or is that going to be written at 2 o'clock this morning?
So, y'all know how Woj, like, couldn't tweet until midnight of NBA free agency because he was switching from Yahoo to ESPN, so he had to stay quiet on his account because the contract didn't kick in until July 1st. That's kind of me right now. I got a lot of stuff in the drafts right now that I want to just unload, but I just want to save them. I got a lot of fire stuff for training camp. I started working on my biggest storylines heading into training camp. I got an offense and a defensive addition coming up. I got a Dalvin Cook article. I got a Trey Waynes article, a whole bunch of stuff. But I'm going to save some of that stuff for training camp, like I said. So the biggest things I'm working on now is just some storylines leading up to training camp, Vikings training camp.
That is awesome. And, I think while we were on recording right here, your Stefon Diggs article got over 500 views. So,
you know,
people are loving it. So, yeah, keep that fire content coming. And guess since our next conversation is going to be about tight ends, I'm going to drop my Bucky Hodges is the player that we need to ascend article sometime around then so we can get into that. Found some interesting stuff doing some research on the tight ends. So, interested, looking forward to having that conversation. I guess before we go, any other words, anything you guys want to say to the people before we sign off?
Go see Spider-Man, y'all.
How you going to tell people to go see it before you see the movie?
Right.
I'm on my way.
I'm excited to see Planet of the Apes.
Yes, sir.
I'm really excited to see that. It comes out, is it this Friday or next Friday? I'm not sure. I believe it's next Friday, I want to say. So I'm really excited to see this Planet of the Apes. I'm not a big movie guy, but I love Planet of the Apes and I love the series.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm definitely ready for that. I tweeted, I think I'm way more excited for that Planet of the Apes movie than I should probably be, but they've all been really, really good. So I'm looking forward to that. Prince, we'll be looking forward to your review after you get out this movie.
Oh, y'all know, well, it'll happen. I'm going to be on Twitter right as I get out. So I'll let you guys know what I think about it. Spidey's just near and dear to my heart. So
just record a little something. We'll throw it up on the page.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, well, thank y'all for listening in to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. My name is Jason Brown, joined this evening by J.R. Miles and the Sexy Prince in his Spider-Pan pajamas. We will talk to you again soon.
So was Brett Favre, so.
Say hi.
Okay.
Say hi.
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 Hey.
All right, say good night.
Good night.
Good night.
My turn.
Okay, it's always turn. Hold on. Okay. Good night, baby. Love you.
Good night, you too.
Give me a kiss.
Aren't we coming?
Not right now. Come so. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Papa J. Okay.
Don't walk the whole
thing.
Say
hi.
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 All right, so good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Love you, babe.
Why are they paying attention to us?
They are paying attention, right?
You have any idea how many times I hear that from a woman? Love it. Oh, my goodness.
Not right now. It's too late. You went for ice cream instead, remember?
Mm-hmm. You're lucky.
All right, go see your mom.
So, what are we going to do?
We'll do it tomorrow. Love you. Okay. Yes.
Why are you calling them for?
Because we're about to record.
I hope.
Love you. Bye.
You came on here.
I know. And you did. Upstairs.
I like. Why are you watching them if you can record?
Because this is who I record. Any more questions?
No.
Okay. Go see your mom. All right. Hi, guys. Yeah, that's my mini-me. Always negotiating.
You gotta put that on the end of the pod, Joe.
You gotta be in the pod.
Right.